the colonial people, the settlers who settled in occupied Palestine. Of course, regarding the Palestinians, not much changes, because the Palestinians are always living under threat, are always subject to arrest and being imprisoned and being subject to isolation and killings, and therefore the Palestinians are not adding to the burdens which they have been putting up with for decades. And of course, finally, what is taking place is not an expression of despair, as the Israelis are trying to say, and as unfortunately some in our Arab world are trying to say. Those who are in a state of despair, those who are frustrated, they express their frustration and despair in other forms, by more bowing down, by resorting to drugs, for example, by resorting to other means. But regarding what is taking place today in Palestine, especially what the youth are doing, the young men and women, this is an expression of a great vigilance and a firm belief in the choice of resistance and confrontation. It also reflects a will in a correct choosing, a correct decision being made. This intifada, brothers and sisters, it puts the whole Ummah once again, it puts the whole Ummah in front of a responsibility towards Palestine and Al-Aqsa. This is the second part. Of course, according with the gathering, I'll try and now begin to speak about this second part. The fundamental issue related to this conflict, the past, if we look at what happened from the beginning to the present, and also what is related to the future, it is well known, it is clear to all of the people, to all those who are listening, and we must stress on this to many of those who are listening as well, it is well known that Israel is not only the result of a Zionist project. It's not just that the Jewish Zionists came together, held a conference, and strived to establish a state or entity for themselves. No, it is a result of an international will back then at that time. It was implanted in our region, and it was and it still enjoys international support, unprecedented support, especially American support at all levels. So when we look at Palestine, the Palestinian territories today, from the outside, it seems that there are two sides in the conflict. We have the government of the enemy, the army of the enemy, and the settlers in the security services of the enemy, the settlers who occupy the 1948 to 1967 territories. On the other side, we have the Palestinian people and the resistance factions, and also the political parties, the popular parties, be it inside Palestine or outside. This is from the outside. However, the real nature of the conflict is different. He who mistakes in identifying the nature of the conflict will commit strategic mistakes. We will always call for correcting the understanding of the true nature of the conflict taking place in Palestine. Israel is the front line for the colonial and the old occupation powers in the world. Israel represents this colonial project which targets the region as a whole and the Ummah as a whole, its people, its cultures, its riches, its resources. Israel is the military barracks, the military base, the upfront military base in this confrontation. And here we must view the Palestinian people, we must take a different view from that view which exists in many of the Arab and Muslim countries. The correct view is that the Palestinian people are fighting and resisting and struggling and practicing jihad and are defending for decades as a representative of this Ummah. and as a force on the front line in defending the sanctities and the dignity and the culture and the present and the resources and the future of this ummah. This is the correct approach. The wrong approach is that which says that this is a problem between Palestinians and Israelis, and the Palestinians must solve their problems, and then we'll see what we can give, how we can help the Palestinians. These are excuses. The wrong approach is that which says that the problem is a Palestinian-Israeli problem, and hence those who fight Israel in any other arena, or those who raise the flag of resistance against Israel, they'll be told, why are you fighting? Are you called upon to fight on the path of Palestinians? Are you called upon to be Palestinian more than the Palestinians themselves? When you are present, or when you take certain stances, this is a wrong approach. It's a very wrong approach. The Ummah doesn't fight on behalf of the Palestinians when it stands with the Palestinians. The Ummah fights on behalf of itself. It defends itself. It defends its sanctities. The Al-Aqsa Mosque, are they only Palestinians? Is this only a Palestinian sanctity? It's a holy place for Islam. Also, the Christian holy sites, are they Palestinian holy sites or Christian holy sites in general? Anyway, the Palestinian people here, they are present on the front lines, and they have been as such for tens of years defending this ummah. The ummah must understand and must take this approach, must take a view from this angle. So based upon this, we find today in this battle that the opposing side is strongly present. The Israeli enemy enjoys all form of support, financial support, economical support, support with regarding weapons, technology, media support. So as the Sheikh who spoke before me, if there is any voice which is raised here or there, efforts are made to silence these voices, like what is happening now with Al-Mayadeen channel. Even raising the voice is forbidden. This is what the opposing side is doing. Israel considers that the responsibility of the world, of the arrogant world, is the duty of this arrogant world to provide it with support. Not giving help. Israel believes this is the duty of the arrogant powers because Israel is defending the interests of these arrogant powers. Just 2 days ago, we've heard that the Israelis demanded assistance from Israel, assistance from America worth $5 million. So the price of the Iranian nuclear program is $5 billion, sorry. $5 billion worth of military aid. Israel is taking advantage of every opportunity in this regard. So the opposing side is doing its utmost in helping its deputy, in helping its representative. But regarding the our ummah, how is it helping its representative? The evaluation in general is negative. We cannot say, we cannot give a positive evaluation. And here, I'm not in the process of criticizing ourselves, not in the process of making our ummah criticize itself. I'm in the process of looking for the reasons and searching for a solution without despair, because this battle exists and it is continuing and it does not stop with certain leaders or with certain factions or certain resistance movements or with a certain generation. And so it is the battle of the Ummah. It's a historic battle, and we must look for where our responsibility lies in this battle. Just a few words to say about what took place before, to say no. This ummah of 1 billion or 1,004,000,000 Muslims, this ummah dealt in a negative way. It failed with this issue. And this is before all the events that unfolded in the region. Some would say, no, the Ummah is preoccupied with the events in Syria, Lebanon is preoccupied with itself, Iraq is preoccupied with itself, there's a war in Yemen, and there's a war in Afghanistan and in Pakistan, etc. Okay, but before, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, there was nothing happening in most of these countries.
تهديدات الجديدة
and the new threats
الحروب الجديدة
and the new wars and this sectarian atmosphere didn't prevail at that time, and some of the resistance movements like us who are accused of being involved in some events, all of this didn't exist before. We were there, Israel was present, we were fighting Israel, be it in Lebanon and Palestine, there were some who were supporting them, be it in Syria or in Iran or elsewhere. Now, the Arab and Islamic world, what did they do during the Israeli invasion in 1982, the Israeli invasion of Lebanon? During the Israeli aggression on Lebanon in April 1996 and the well-known Qana massacres, what did they do for us? In 2006, in the July 2006 war, we refer to a lot of sympathy in the Arab and Islamic world, but let's speak about numbers. Let's speak about sympathy. Give me one protest in the Arab and Islamic world of 100,000, 50,000. And we're talking about 1 billion, 4 million Muslims. The war on Gaza in 2008. The terrible war, which was repeated. And the last war. Back then, there was no problem. Where was the Arab and Islamic world? Except those who had an honorable stance, of course, be it by financial support or by a political stance or military support. But those who did this were limited. If we look at the Ummah of 1 million, of 1 billion, 4 million Muslims, here I'm referring to before the latest events, so that nobody would justify and say that we had sedition from Indonesia to I don't know where. No. I'm speaking here, I'm referring to the period before the seditions. That's how they approached the Palestinian cause, unfortunately. So, this requires us to stop and take a look. There is no doubt that the latest events which unfolded increased the losses in this battle. It increased the losses, without any doubt, because many of those who could have exerted efforts, be it political or media or military, or provide financial or logistical support for Palestine, many of those now are preoccupied with the conflicts taking place elsewhere under the title of existence and preserving existence. This requires us to stop and take a look. I have a proposal I want to make in the end, but I want to shed light on some quick points, for example. What is the reason? Although we find sometimes, unfortunately, when anything takes place in the region, we find some who stand and threaten with the 1 billion, 4 million Muslims. For tens of years, Palestine has been occupied. One day, just one day, make a threat with these 1 billion, 4 million Muslims. When we look at the reasons, let's take, for example, of course, it's not appropriate now to give a complete research, but for example, one example is that there is a conviction amongst many of the Arab and Islamic governments, many in the Arab and Islamic governments, and this conviction has even reached the people and some Islamic movements and some religious people, Islamists in the world. There's a conviction which says that we have no responsibility towards Palestine and towards Al-Aqsa Mosque. They say this is the responsibility of the Palestinian people. And if we revise this issue, we find that over the past few years, especially over the last decade, but even over the previous decades, this issue has been worked upon by the study centers, whereby it reached the level whereby in religious jurisprudence they speak about it. Now, there is religious talk which is not based upon any real religion, but there are religious scholars who are trying to promote this idea that we have no responsibility. We, as an Islamic world, as governments, as peoples, as ulama, as parties, we have no responsibility. This is a responsibility of the Palestinian people. They must deal with the issue. Now, This reason requires us to put together a plan. Not to say this is something clear for the Arab and Islamic people, no. My dear clerics, indeed, there are many people who are convinced. They're not convinced that they have a religious duty towards Palestine. No, this conviction which we have, as the Sheikh who spoke before me, who said that all of the ulama of the Ummah agree to this, this is an issue of consensus until from the beginning of Islam until today. However, this which is very clear to you, for others, because of the misleading approach, the misleading efforts, especially over the past decade, this issue is no longer clear to many people, many of the people. So this requires religious efforts. Number two, a sense that Israel no longer poses a danger to these governments and to these peoples. Israel is a threat to the Palestinians, so that the Palestinians deal with it. However, there's a conviction that Israel no longer poses a danger to Lebanon or Syria, that Jordan is safe, Egypt is safe, and that the other Arab countries are safe from any Israeli aggression or Israeli ambitions or Israeli threat. Today, unfortunately, this conviction also exists, not only in many of the governments, but many of the peoples as well. Even many of the intellectuals have such a conviction. There's also something else. As a result of the jihad and the sacrifices and the achievements and victories of the resistance movements in the region, yes, the Israeli danger has decreased, and Israel could no longer remain in southern Lebanon and in Gaza and cannot build the Greater Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates. The Greater Israel, which was defeated by Lebanon and Gaza, this Greater Israel, yes, it has fallen, it has been defeated. However, this strong Israel, which occupies Palestine, except Gaza, and is isolating Gaza, this Israel is so strong, it's threatening the governments and the people of the region. It's taking advantage of all of the current and upcoming opportunities. So we must pursue efforts once again to tell the Arab and Islamic governments and the peoples and tell them that Israel is a danger. Israel has goals. So this also requires political, cultural, media efforts, and this is a response responsibility on the shoulders of the clerics and the intellectuals. Because what leads one to rise and to move? Either a sense of duty, whether it be a religious duty or a nationalist duty or an ethical duty, or when one senses responsibility. Today we have reached the stage whereby what is surrounding Palestine, they are no longer convinced that they have religious duty, nor do they have a sense of being in danger. We in Lebanon, there are many in Lebanon who are convinced that Israel no longer poses a danger to Lebanon, nor a threat to Lebanon, and that the resistance in Lebanon is taking this issue as a justification only to keep hold of its arms. This is one of the catastrophes, an example of the mindset which exists in our region. Number three is misidentifying the enemy and the friend and going ahead with the international will, going ahead with how the international powers specify who are the enemies and who are the friends. And here the issue of Iran and Israel is clear. Number four, mistakes regarding identifying priorities, which made many people drown in certain dangerous conflicts far away from the central battle. And this is what we're witnessing today and yesterday. And unfortunately, this is what we're witnessing now very clearly. It's painful for one to see, and when one looks around and sees how before this Ummah was able to rise and to send tens of thousands of mujahideen. I'm not discussing tens of thousands of mujahideen to Afghanistan in order to liberate Afghanistan from the Soviet occupation and to provide great capabilities to them and to spend huge amounts of money, government money and private money, from their own pockets and from their own assets. and mobilization throughout the Islamic world. But this didn't happen for Palestine. Even the battle in Afghanistan, even attracted Palestinians. But this didn't happen with Palestine. Isn't this a big question which requires us to stop and look and to answer? Is Afghanistan more holy than Palestine? There's no doubt that it is a cause of righteousness, Afghanistan. But that's a cause of righteousness, and this is also a cause of sanctities. And here it's a threat to the whole Ummah. So why didn't this happen with Palestine today also, so that we don't only focus on Afghanistan, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen? At the very least, these countries which are witnessing widespread wars, even in Libya, the fighting taking place there. We see weapons, we see capabilities, we see money, billions of dollars being spent, government money and private money, and fatwas being issued, religious fatwas, a process of mobilization. Why isn't this being applied with Palestine? If we survey the suicide operations, and I won't call them martyrdom operations, the suicide operations that have been carried out ever since 2003 against the Iraqi people, against the Americans, we bless these operations, but against the Iraqi people, Sunnis, Shia, Kurds and others, mosques, Husseiniyas, churches, marketplaces, schools, holy sites, and in Afghanistan, and in Pakistan, and in Syria, and last year in Lebanon, and in Nigeria, day after day, and in Yemen, and in other places. If we survey these suicide operations and we bring these youth who we must cry for a lot, because they lost this world and the aftermath, if we had brought this youth and this number of operations, very clearly they would have been enough to eliminate Israel's existence. But they were used to destroy our people and our societies and our army and our will, and even to destroy our sympathies towards one another, even to destroy our stance towards the central cause, which is the Palestinian cause. And I mean what I say. Doesn't this require us to stop and take a look and to strive and to search for the solution? Number five, what is worse than everything I have mentioned, this fifth factor is one of the worst factors. It is what has taken place over the past decades, but especially over the past 2 years, it has increased. What I'm referring to is the efforts being made to create hostility from many of the Arab and Islamic peoples towards the Palestinian people. Therefore, instead of focusing some of the Arab official efforts and focusing the efforts of some Arab media outlets to find a mobilization which leads to hostility towards Israel and the Zionist project, what was happening as a result of the media, as a result of politics, and as a result of what is taking place on the battlefield was no. It was transforming the Palestinian people into an enemy or a rival, or showing them as a people who are not loved. That's at the least level, not an enemy, although sometimes they reach the level of the enemy. I'll refer to this later on. Put up with my openness today. But at the very least, the efforts being made were for the people, Arab and Islamic people, to reach the stage whereby they don't care if the Palestinian people live or die, or if their blood is being spilled. Our blood is being spilled for the Arab and Islamic people to reach the stage whereby they sense that they don't care for the fate of a people as a whole. Here I'm not speaking about an independent Palestinian state or an entity. I'm speaking about the people, Palestinian people under occupation. Over the past few years, efforts have been made whereby this people, the people whose homes have been demolished, as we saw in the last Gaza war, we find people in the Arab and Islamic world who curse and who make fun of this. What does this reflect? So efforts have been made in this direction, and certain events have been taken advantage of. I don't want to hold anyone responsible. I'm referring to the results. Nobody should say that I am judging and holding someone responsible, saying someone made a mistake here or there. What I'm talking about are the results. In the end, the result is, in the beginning of the 1970s, the Palestinian people were presented as an enemy for Jordan and the Jordanian people. There's no doubt that intelligence agencies played a role and mistakes were made. Everything helps, yes. In Lebanon, a civil war was made in Lebanon under a Palestinian justification, under a Palestinian title, and the Palestinian people, the Palestinian camps, the Palestinian factions became an enemy, regardless of the reasons. That's something else. And the impression was that the Israelis aren't the enemy, the Palestinians are the enemy. Also, at one specific stage, and also as a result of a mistake during the Iraq-Irani war, there were some who pursued efforts in order to transform the Palestinian people and to transform Iran's stance into a hostile stance against the Palestinian people, whereby they took advantage of some mistakes, whereby this person or that person supported Saddam Hussein during the eight-year war on Iran. For example, regarding Kuwait, the Palestinian people paid a price for the war of Kuwait and the invasion of Kuwait and the occupation of Kuwait. Now, whether it was right or wrong, that's something else. But anything, be it correct or not, it was taken advantage of in order to transform the Palestinian people to an enemy of these people, in order for these people to exit the minds and hearts, for the Palestinian people to exit the minds and hearts and sympathies and the circle of responsibility of the Arab and Muslim masses. This is being worked on today, meaning before the latest events that unfolded in the region, it's well known that the people who still had a stance in support of Palestine and the people of Palestine and the resistance factions were Iran, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, the Bahraini people. But now, what is being done? Now, efforts are being pursued. I don't want to go into details, but it requires us to be precise. I'm very intent on not creating sensitivities, but I want to draw your attention. There are some who want to say to those who still support Palestine, Lebanese, Bahrainis, Iraqis, Iranis, Yemenis, Syrians, there are efforts being made to tell these people that this Palestinian issue is not your issue, it's not your battle, you're mistaken. Your battle is where your existence is being subject to danger. These are the efforts being exerted now, and this is the most dangerous thing which could happen. In the previous wars, which were waged on Gaza or on Palestine, we found that there was sympathy, tears, prayers. But in the last war, we found in many of the Arab media outlets, we found, as I said, people are making fun of them, the Palestinians. Some even reached the level whereby they addressed Netanyahu and said, crush them, slaughter them, kill them. This is a very high level of hatred which we have reached. So this factor also is a dangerous factor which we must stop and take a look at. And here there is a responsibility on the shoulders of the Palestinians and the others. Regarding the non-Palestinians like us and the other Arab and Muslim people, we must not take this issue lightly. We must not accept this. We must present the truth. Palestinian people are oppressed. They have put up for long decades. They have put up with the hardships and the challenges related to the Ummah, not just with the Palestinians themselves, the Palestinian people of resistance who sacrificed tens of thousands of martyrs. Thousands of their young men and women are spending their time in prison. Those Palestinians who are living outside their country, this humanitarian perspective, this jihadist perspective which the Palestinian people represents, this is the image which we must present, whatever be the circumstances and whatever be the mistakes. On the other hand, the Palestinian brothers are called upon to be vigilant, to be cautious, and to reevaluate and to manage the situation correctly, to be aware of all the factors, and to pursue efforts to limit the losses, because in the end, They are at the front lines of the battle. If they are not on the front lines, then this battle cannot reach anywhere. Whatever be the assistance, whatever be the sides, whoever be the sides that provide aid, the last issue is that related to the efforts being pursued to ignite sectarian sedition. This is one of the biggest dangers today. Yes, over the past 2 or 3 years, there is a general mood, be it amongst the Christians in the Arab world, the Christians of the East, the general mood is in support for the Palestinian cause, the Palestinian people. It stands with the Palestinian people and considers Israel as an enemy as a threat. What happened over the past few years has transformed this mood and gave a sectarian label to the battle. And therefore, the impression is that the biggest danger to Christians in this region are the Muslims. That's a big mistake. And at some time, some might find Israel as an ally or a protectorate in light of this takfiri danger, which does not differentiate between one person or another. A takfiri project which doesn't allow anyone to think or to revise. Also, within this same sectarian framework and to transform the confrontation into Sunni and Shia, this also requires efforts. In the end, what I recommend is to put together a certain framework, and the International Union for the Ulama of Resistance, which has organized this conference, this International Union could take the initiative and might put together a framework whereby the resistance factions and the centers for studies could participate, whereby we could talk about the reasons and also refer to the means of reaching a solution. Yes, we can address this issue. We can exert efforts. We might not be able to attract all the Ummah. But if we retract half of it, one quarter, one fifth, we accept one fifth. If we accept any percentage of the Ummah, it's better than the bitter situation that exists today. We can exert efforts, yes. I don't think this requires long efforts. We are all in this battle. Many conferences have been held before. Institutions have held conferences and discussed this. We can reach a result soon, and we can distribute responsibilities. I'm not saying that the International Union for the Ulama of Resistance can reach solutions by itself, but we can distribute responsibilities. The governments, the ulama, the intellectuals, the media outlets, we can all exert efforts at the very, very least. If we won't win, we can put a limit to the loss. We can put a limit to the losses. I call that if the situation continues as is, the central battle is being subject to losses. We must, at the very least, put a limit to these losses. In conclusion, brothers and sisters, in light of these great sacrifices for the young men and women and the people of Palestine, we call for real support for this new intifada, far away from all of these sensitivities and all of the opinions and the negative mobilization and the latest conflicts and the disagreements. This intifada, we must view it indeed as an intifada which is capable at the very least of defending Al-Aqsa and the sanctities. It might not be able to liberate Palestine now, but as Sheikh Nafis said before, yes, this intifada, if it continues, if it is supported, it can impose on the government of the enemy and its masters, it can impose on them to stay away from Al-Aqsa Mosque and not to continue with threatening this religious and Islamic sanctity. And the responsibility of preserving sanctities is the responsibility of the Ummah as a whole. So if they, the Palestinians, represent us in defending the sanctity and preserving it,